Welcome to the Cycle Systems Academy podcast. We have two guests with us this week, one of whom is almost resident guest now, Mike Stead. So Mike, thanks so much for coming on the pod.
Great. G'day, Sean.
And we also have Mark Haylett, who is genuinely one of our very oldest friends at Cycle Systems. And it's not an exaggeration to say there may not be a Cycle Systems or Cycle Systems Academy without Mark Haylett, because Mark, who now works for Bosch, and we're going to be talking all about Bosch today. But when we set up Cycle Systems back in 2008, Mark was working for Specialized. And I was walking around the bike show at Earl's Court with my suit on and my leather suitcase full of glossy leaflets asking people to sponsor us. And Mark just said, how many bikes do you want? And I can't quite describe it as, you know, anyone who's set up a business knows what it's like. You've got no money, you know, no friends, no support. You haven't got a clue what you're doing. Imagine about 20, 25 Specialized bikes landing in boxes. And there were tri bikes, there were hybrid bikes. There was just this, you know, geared brakes. It was an incredible support. And we still have some of those bikes for level two training now. So, longest intro in the world, but Mark Haylett from Bosch, thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Sean. Thank you.
So, essentially, Mike, you were at the Bosch dealer training with Mark recently. So, Mark, you do all of the Bosch technical training, and I've done some Bosch technical training with you, as have, in fact, many of our graduates as well, so they can go on and work with Bosch stuff. And Mike, you got in touch and said, hey, we've got to talk about the new tech. There's so much coming out. Obviously, every single person who contacts me about bike mechanic training at the moment asks about e-bikes. What do you do for e-bikes? What is there for e-bikes? So we know people want to know this. So Mark, do you want to take us through maybe what Bosch does to support dealers and the industry in terms of training? And then we can start getting into what's new for 2022.
Yeah, sure. So Bosch obviously firmly believes in training and supporting the IBDs, and always have done ever since kind of Bosch came to the market in 2010, 2011, albeit that was in sort of, well, not in the UK because of the regulations with e-bikes. But really from 2015, that's when the regulations changed here. In that it went from 200 watts on a motor to 250 watts, which is what Bosch is or was. And that enabled the UK market to open up with all the brands selling bikes in the UK. So at that point, Bosch needed somebody, a tech rep, obviously me, to come into the market and create a pool of dealers, if you like, that were trained, certified, whatever you want to call it, with Bosch. So the way they do the training is that you have to attend a training course. Certainly it was 5 years ago, this was the way it was. Attend a training course, which was held by me in whatever location. You would be issued with a certificate at the end of the course, at the end of that day. And with that certificate, you could then buy our diagnostic tool. And of course, buying the diagnostic tool was just the easy part, because the training that you would have had that day teaches you how to use it. So the whole point of it was that you get delivered the diagnostic tool, which was £75 or something, and then of course download the interface to your PC, plug the bike in, do the diagnostics, and basically you're away. So the training we give basically gives a dealer confidence and the knowledge to work with the product or our product properly. And they're trained by Bosch. They're not trained by a third-party company that I would work for, if you like. You know, I work for Bosch. I go to Germany. I get trained by the guys in Germany, and I pass that information on to all the dealers that attend the courses. So I've been doing it now 6.5 years, maybe a little bit more, and we've trained hundreds of dealers now. Out of the, I don't know how many dealers are there in the UK, a couple of thousand, approximately, maybe a bit less, I'm not entirely sure. But if you look at the amount of accounts that we've got and those accounts that have been trained, the numbers certainly from 2015 till now have grown massively, as you would expect, has the growth of e-bikes at the same time. So, yeah, like I said at the beginning, Bosch put a massive emphasis on training the IBDs, giving them the knowledge, which gives them the confidence. And, of course, that then gives the brand its... what's the word I'm looking for? It gives the brand that kind of quality feel to it. It gives people, the consumer, mind that if something goes wrong, a dealer would know how to fix it and could fix it efficiently, in a nutshell.
And I can't emphasize enough, and I'm sure many listeners of this podcast will understand, the critical nature of this training and also the lack of it across many of the brands. Interestingly enough, I'm currently involved in writing an e-bike apprenticeship at very early stages of it at the moment. And one of the challenges doing that, of course, is it really is based in the brands, isn't it, in the equipment. And there are a number of brands, I won't mention any names, but yeah, there's one fairly big player, especially aftermarket player, which is appalling at technical support. And I was speaking to one of our graduates recently, Phil from Dragon Cycles in Wales, and Phil has seen an awful lot of this product. And he got really excited when at Eurobike, their CEO or whoever it was announced there'd be a huge amount of dealer training and support and yada, yada, yada. And he said he's still waiting for it and it hasn't materialized. And he was very frustrated by it. So it's great that this is on the market. So, Mike, you attended a training course just this weekend or last week, basically. So tell us a bit of what was involved.
Well, it was a fantastic training course. Yeah, I think Mark and Jack did a great job. An awful lot of stuff. You walk into the room and you're like, these guys must have each driven an HGV because there were bits and pieces everywhere. There were four sets of all of the new systems, and as well as four or five bikes kicking around, and there was a brilliant setup. So there were about 15, 16 of us from across the region. This was up in Avonmore in the north of Scotland. And we basically spent the whole day in a very methodical way working through what the new smart system was, what it meant for us as mechanics, as people offering services to Bosch customers. Going through what's new, what's changed, what this means for existing bikes. Spoiler alert, there's no backwards compatibility. It's all new. Lots of new interesting features and lots of tips and tricks. That was actually, I wrote like two pages of notes, where, Mark and Jack walking through, try this, do this, be aware of this, all that sort of stuff. So the kind of stuff that you can only really get through a deep relationship with the folks, I guess, back at head office in Germany, where they're the ones who developed the product and they're then sharing that expertise, stuff that might not make it into a manual or not into the first cut of the manual anyway. So, I left feeling a lot more dangerous about the new systems and keen to start to work with some. It was quite neat to actually get to set the systems up for the first time. And I don't know if this was deliberate, Mark, but we were split up into groups of four, and so these small teams of like four or five people on each team, and we had to assemble one of the new smart systems with zero instructions. And fortunately, everything's color coded. And unless you're using a rock or a hammer, then you can't really go wrong. But it did get to, there was one bit where it was a bit like the opening scenes of 2001, where everyone's kind of sitting around working out what goes where and when and all that sort of stuff. But we managed to get it all plugged in and working. And it was a great experience. And I think it bodes well for the for maintenance of these systems into the future, and also the expandability and upgradability of them as well.
That was very deliberate, Mike. That process, that whole thinking that we did, that training course, as you've just said, basically, but it's really well, it's planned down to the last second. The timing of it, the content of it, the slides, how me and Jack share what we say, those boxes with the new kitting, the fact that you guys had to set it up. Is completely planned, and I appreciate your feedback there. And because we've only started doing that particular course at the beginning of this month, November, so I think the Avimore one was the ninth course. So we've only done it nine times, which is not a lot, but they've all been done in the same way, and the take up has been great. So to hear your feedback and say that was good. But the fact that those kits were not assembled, albeit on the table, you had to put it together, it makes people think. And also, we deliberately did it after lunch, because otherwise you sit there and you start to fall asleep and yawn because you've eaten a load of food. So we deliberately did it like that, just so you get back up, start making you think about it, put it together. And in every single case where we've been doing it like that, people have lit up, and that it makes them ask questions and it makes them have a real thoughtful insight into what Bosch has done with it. So, thank you for your comments there.
Yeah, no worries. I was going to say it was great to see some of the design thinking, which has obviously evolved from the from the Gen 3, from the current system, through to the smart system, and things like where the seals go and how plugs connect in, and do you need a little screwdriver tab to get underneath something to pull it out, and all that sort of thing, and the color coding as well. It's obvious that this is not only an evolution of the technology, but also the ergonomics of how it actually physically goes together, and hopefully that then flows into speedier workshop diagnostics and easier retrofitting of bits.
Exactly.
Well, I definitely want to get into those systems, guys. The training course sounds a bit like the Krypton factor for bike mechanics. Was there an assault as well?
Yeah, we took them outside and ran around the playground.
I think that'd be a good idea.
Sean.
There's a few bike mechanics I know out there that could do with that anyway. So essentially, there have been a few versions of the Bosch systems, as we've talked about. My wife Julia, co-director as well at Cycle Systems, incidentally, has got the first generation, the Bosch CX Performance with the smaller chainring, that version. So, Mark,
I need to train you a bit more. You've made an error there.
Yep, go on.
That's not first generation, but go on, we'll get there, I'm sure.
Brilliant. Well, that shows my ignorance.
Sorry, mate.
Essentially, that's all good. It's all good. I'm here to learn. So, essentially, take us through the evolution of the Bosch e-bike system since 2015, and then what's just coming out?
Well, Sean, it actually goes back to 2010, 2011, because that's when System 1 came out, which was the classic system. Obviously, not really in the UK. Then there's a few bikes that found their way here, however, and why, I don't know, but they have done. A couple of brands did. But generally speaking, there is a handful of dealers in the whole UK that have seen it and have got the diagnostic tool that it works with. And to be fair to yourself, I'm not even sure you've seen it. You certainly haven't got the diagnostic tool for it, and you wouldn't be speaking to your clients, your course attendees about it. So basically, from 2015, as you say, that was System 2. And that was where the Bosch CX motor came to fruition. That was the Gen 2 CX with the small sprocket on the front. And that is a current system. System 2 is a current system. That CX Gen 2 motor has been succeeded now by the Bosch CX Gen 4. But basically, that all comes under the System 2 portfolio, which for us means that it's the diagnostic tool with the black USB key and a wire that goes from your PC to the bike, and it uses Wi-Fi, connects to the diagnostic server in Germany, and you do diagnostics that way. That's the kit that, up until the beginning of November, should we say, most, if not all, Bosch trained dealers have got. You've got one, Sean. It comes in the white box, black USB key. That's System 2. That's still running, that's still current, but we've introduced this System 3 now, so meaning new diagnostic tool again. And this System 3 is called Smart System, and it's all new technology, and it's a single system at the moment, so a drive unit, battery, display, remote control, with a different diagnostic interface, again, PC-based, Windows 10 and above. So the best way, and Mike would hopefully agree with me, the best way that we've used to describe where we've come from is that there's three, or there is or has been three systems, and it's based on the diagnostic tool. System 1, System 2, System 3, and it's the diagnostic version that denotes the difference. So not to confuse it with Gen 2, Gen 3, Gen 4 motors. That's obviously different. But the system, this new system, System 3, is what we've introduced in 2022. And this is the bit that we're training dealers on at the moment. And it's very exciting, very different, brand new technology, the latest technology, digitalization, every aspect of it is far more technically advanced than what we're currently using, although there are some similarities, but it gives Bosch that kind of future proofing and it gives that kind of angle to develop into the future and develop that technology even further, which unfortunately System 2 has its limitations. And that's why we've got this new System 3.
Yeah, so just to confirm here, there is no backwards compatibility between the smart system, the new stuff, and the old stuff.
Nothing at all. This technology comes with a different hardware. So if you like, the technology being software, it will not work with the hardware that we've currently using on System 2. So as much as Bosch maybe would have liked to have maintained that, they probably looked at it in the beginning whenever they started this journey. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the plugs and the wiring needs to be different for the technology, the software to work properly, as you could probably appreciate. So in other words, the hardware we've currently got doesn't support this new software technology. Therefore, all the wiring, the plugs, the sockets, the charger, every single thing is different. However, like I said, System 2 is still current, and the smart system is just one system on its own. It's basically a Gen 4 CX drive unit. So the characteristics of it are the same as the System 2 Gen 4 CX. So it's not like it rides any differently. The characteristics of it, the way it rides and performs, is the same. So it's 85 newton meters of torque and all that kind of, 400% assistance, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, the difference is, yes, the wiring, the look and the feel and the diagnostics, and obviously the use of the smartphone, the smart system app, which is called the Bosch Flow app, which obviously partners or pairs with the system, if you like. And that is kind of what this is all about. So it's enabling the consumer to have a smartphone which will link and communicate with the bike. And I'm sure we'll probably get into that a bit more.
Yeah, so a couple of points just to pick up there. So if people are dead keen, if they've invested in the Bosch ecosystem to the extent of maybe having a second charger or a second battery is quite often a common thing that people can do. You can't use an older style battery, meaning the current batteries, or a charger with the new one. It's a new battery, connector, new chargers.
Yeah, the connector's different and the battery end plates are different. And at the moment, the battery is a 750 watt hour. So that wouldn't fit into any System 2 because that size currently is 625 watt hours. So clearly bigger battery anyway, irrespective of wiring and plugs, they physically wouldn't fit because of its the size of it's longer.
Yeah. So I'm sure there will be some people out there who will scream and curse exactly the same way as when Apple changes their connector every decade. It's just one of those things. So Bosch let the existing system run as long as it could, and then they needed to do a ground up rethink.
Exactly that. I mean, the System 2 is still current.
Yeah.
And there's no plans for it to go obsolete anytime soon. Obviously, products phase in and phase out, as you could imagine. And the smart system at the moment is only one, as I've said, it's only one product line. So from a price point of view, if you like, on a bike, and I don't know what they would be, but being it's a Gen 4 CX and a 750 watt hour battery, that's going to be a slightly more high end price.
Yeah.
So you're not entry level with it. So do you see what I mean?
Yeah, and I guess obviously everyone knows Bosch. Obviously the massive experience in the automotive parts world, car systems. Would anyone, like, if you were looking at a System 2 bike, so one of the current models of bikes in a bike shop right now, should you have any reason to be afraid that it won't be supported in 5 or 10 years?
No reason at all, because it will be supported.
Yeah.
As far as the actual hardware goes, I think Bosch commit to make components that have gone end of life, if you like. They support those products by keeping manufacturing going for another 8 years.
Yeah.
Which is why if you've got a System 1 classic bike, you can still buy the drive unit and the battery, I believe, even now. I believe the display has gone end of life. That's now gone. But there is on that particular system, there is a path of upgrading to the Intuvia display so that bike can be kept working. So in a nutshell, if somebody's got a 2011, 2012 bike, we still support that now. And it's 2021.
And that is fabulous, because you know I see bikes in here in my workshop that come in from people who have spent, it's generally at the lower end of the spectrum, but some of these were quite nice bikes. I saw like 1,800 quid from significant brands. I think I've seen one in here that was a Raleigh branded bike, and people think, oh, Raleigh, you know, it's a big brand, right?
Yeah.
I've had bikes that have come in with batteries that have been knackered because they've been kept outside in a shed. Don't leave your batteries outside in sheds over winter, guys. But you know, customer brings in this bike. Bike's only done maybe 500 miles. You know, retired person. Bike's only a couple of years old. You can't get batteries for them anymore. And this was, and the guy was really shocked. He's like, but I spent like 1,500, 1,800 quid on this bike. It's only 2 years old. Why can't I get a battery? And I said, look, sorry, there's a guy down in the New Forest who will make you one for about 600 quid. But no longer, you know. And I rang up Raleigh, whoever the Raleigh distributor is, and they're like, no, that's an old bike. We don't support that. Buy a new one. I'm like, guys, it was only like 2-3 years old. So it's really good to hear Bosch, you know, standing behind the consumer there.
Yeah, everything. I mean, the training is the same. The knowledge we give to the dealers, the support we get, obviously enables the consumer, to keep their bike on the road. Because some consumers... Well, you know, there's such a different variation, isn't it? You've got the mountain bikers, you've got the touring, the retired, living in the country, the holiday, the hire bikes. You know, some bikes, like the commuting ones, they can do, I don't know, 15,000 kilometres in a year or two, and they're still going strong and they're still supported. But then likewise, we still need to support the consumer that uses the bike only in good weather, only in summer, only when they're on their holiday retreat in Cornwall or wherever, down to see Sean. And those bikes could have, you know, 200 miles on them in the space of 5 years. Mm. But if it enables that user to have that mobility and get around those hilly areas, then, you know, the e-bike opens up their world. Whether or not they use the bike regularly and they go a long way on it, or they just use it occasionally as a form of mobility, then we still have to support the needs of everyone.
Yeah. So, Mark, on this line, I'll let Sean speak shortly. Don't worry, Sean. Something that we talked about on a previous podcast was the industry's dirty little secret of main bearing failures, what you would call a bottom bracket on a normal bike.
Yeah.
And I think we discussed this at the training session where, you know, Bosch had said, you know, yep, some of the early generation motors, we did have, you know, an issue. We identified that there's a kit for that. But the newer ones, again, we were talking, you know, you guys haven't seen any failures on the Gen 4 CX motors that have now been out like two and a half years. So maybe just talk to us about that dirty industry secret of bottom brackets and what Bosch does around that space.
Yeah, well, I mean, originally the Gen 2 CX, for various reasons, had a quite high rate of bearing failure on the drive side of the motor. Which is obviously something Bosch were conscious of, and they've made various developments, or they did make various developments of the drive unit, spec changes, you know, running changes, different bearing qualities, different seal, different grease, and such and such. Now, ultimately, that drive unit, the Gen 2 CX, was kind of 2013 onwards. That was when that Generation 2 motor came out. That design, if you like, that platform. And that went all the way through until, 2019, I believe. And the design of bikes that motor was fitted to got more and more extreme on the EMTB side, and we're starting to see bearing failures becoming more and more evident, particularly in this part of the world and in a couple of other sort of mainland European countries. It seemed to be worse than others, whether or not it's because we always ride our bikes in the rain and the mud, because if we didn't, we'd never ride, or it's the type of mud and the chalk and sand and everything else that we have here. I don't know. Either way, the bearings didn't have a particularly great durability. So when the new Gen 4 CX came out, the first thing we had to look at was how to make these bearings more durable. And basically, we did it with a complete redesign of the drive unit. Just quickly, on the Gen 2 drive unit, we did come up with a bearing repair kit, which dealers can buy. And we suggest that that's a dealer-only fit because it is a bit technical and it needs the software to be checked on the diagnostics and updated or check for error codes, etc., etc. We don't recommend it's a consumer fit. It's dealer fit only, really. That's on the Gen 2 side. And then on the Gen 4, that motor's been in the market now for approximately 2 years, 2 months, roughly, I think. And in that time, I've yet to see a bearing failure on that drive unit, including my own bike, which I ride every weekend in all weathers. And I always have done for the last 5 years. So I know about bearings on these old drive units. So I can compare with the new Gen 4. And the difference is basically night and day. It's unbelievable how much better it is. But purely because Bosch have obviously changed the design of the motor, the bearings are more inboard with a couple of seal rings and snap rings that go over the top of the bearing. And it's just very, very hard for the muck and the crud and the water to get past these seals and into the bearing. Now, ultimately, no bearing lasts forever.
Yeah.
But with the Gen 4, I've yet to see one that has worn out. Honestly, I have. So the improvement, and this is what's good about Bosch, is they look at the market and they look at the issues that we have. They look at the warranty cases and the failures, and because everything obviously does, nothing's perfect. But they look at it and they say, right, how can we make it better for the future? What do we need to do? And certainly with the Gen 4 over the Gen 2, they improved it that much. And they've pretty much nailed it. It's fantastic, that drive unit, in a lot of ways, but mainly the bearing issue. I've never spoken to about a bearing failure on a Gen 4, and that's in 2.5 years. So that's not bad. It's clearly standing the test of time on reliability and durability.
If you want to break into the bike trade, train your staff, or even learn some new skills just for fun, Cycle Systems Academy has a course for you. Our graduates come to us from all over the globe and train with us to gain the highest recognised cycle mechanic qualifications available. The bike industry supports and believes in Cycle Systems Academy, which means they'll believe in you too.
Yep, a bit like we talked about on the podcast with Ryan from Ryan Builds Wheels recently, where we were talking about a lot of consumers, when they're buying a modern aero road bike, they're not aware of the servicing issues they're going to run into in the future when they get a new fork and the dealer charges them £200 for labor time because of the amount of time it takes. And I think it's the same with e-bikes. You can go into a shop or look online and go, ooh, shiny. And you're buying into this incredible piece of technology. I was at the Verbier e-bike festival this summer, and it was incredible, some of the new bikes that were out there, both in terms of the lightweight, low-powered machines through to the absolute monsters, you know, essentially. But not many consumers know that this one can be serviced and this one can't. And it is very, very important, that education side of things. So it's certainly reassuring, Mark, to know that we not only have the service kits available, but that they're less necessary and less needed. So if we get into the Flow app then, is this aimed primarily at mountain bikers? Is this for all users? You know, tell us about what is going to be different for the riders with this new system.
Yeah, so this Bosch e-bike Flow app is for any Bosch smart system bike. So whatever the brands fit it to, So it's not designed for any specific demographic of user. It's just any user, rider of that system. So hybrid, EMTB, cargo, if it finds its way onto it, then it can basically pair with it. And with the smart system app, there's a number of features that we now offer, including over-the-air updates for the consumer. So that can be done just by clicking an update button and seeing if any one of the four updatable bits of hardware have the latest software on them. If not, it can be done. It also shows the usual features you'd expect to see, like mapping and navigation, user profile, the type of bike you've got. There are quite a number of very, very nice features on it, which is the way you can customize the ride modes. So depending on what the ride modes are set by the brand would depend on the adjustability of them. So for example, with Eco and Turbo, you could adjust various aspects of the riding characteristics, whether it's the torque or the speed, obviously up to 25 kilometers an hour, the dynamic, the starting point of the assistance, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas with EMTB mode or Tour Plus, because they're dynamic modes, they're obviously not adjustable. In other words, they've already got that customized aspect, haven't they? Because they go from two or three different modes within themselves to give that kind of traction, if you like. So anything without a customized mode, so anything, so basically Eco Tour Sport Turbo would all be customizable by the consumer. That's the easiest way to put it. But it depends on what the brand specifies when they build the bike as to what the riding modes are. But that can all be done via the mobile phone, which is quite good fun. So I've got a bike with the smart system on, and I just, when I first took delivery of it, I was obviously playing around with it just to see what can it do and how does it work. It's the first time I'd seen it. Connected the bike, went into the customized ride modes for Eco and just set the torque to 85 newton meters. So basically turned Eco into Turbo. And it's just quite funny to see how adjustable potentially it can be. So that's a very nice feature. Other features are being able to contact your local Bosch dealer, depending on where you are. So you can go into a map, which would show you where you are and where your nearest Bosch service center might be, effectively. Yeah, it's very, very powerful. A lot of features and a lot of things that we've never done before, which make it very unique to this actual system.
And in terms of the control units available for the consumers, have we got very different looking control units, or is it the familiar ones that we've seen in the Gen 2 and 3?
No, it's all different again. So the actual remote control switch, if you like, or the control unit, the bit that sits on the left, in other words, so the thumb controls, that's more of a focal point now on the new system, because that's where the USB-C diagnostic port goes in for the dealer. That's kind of the brains of the system, if you want to call it that, aside from the drive unit. But there's a lot more going on with the remote control itself. It's a color remote control, being that it doesn't have a screen, but there are LED backlights on the remote control, which would signify what mode you're in. So, you know, red is obviously turbo, and purple would be EMTB, or blue is Tour Plus. So you can see what mode you're in just from the color. And you can also see how much battery life you've got, because it goes from green, which is denotes 20% battery. If green goes to white, that's 10%. Then it would go to orange, which is you've got 30% left. Then it goes to red, which is one LED, which is 20% left. And then it starts to flash 10% left. And the whole point of this color coding is because it can run without a display. So all of what I've just said is irrelevant if the consumer has the Kiox 300 display on the stem, on the handlebars. Okay, but without the display, in other words, you can run the cable from the drive unit all the way into the remote switch on its own. So clean looking cockpit, zero display. If you want to set it up that way, you can. You need the remote control to have this color signature, so you know what mode you're in, et cetera, you know, range, mode, things like that. If you had a display, then you would look at that because that information is there, if that makes sense. The actual remote control itself is a lot more adjustable on the bar. There's different size brackets to raise or lower the fitting of the remote onto the bar. And the actual shape of the remote is very ergonomically designed. So it feels right. It's easy to use. It's very well made. It's solid. It doesn't flex around on the handlebars. Hopefully Mike would agree. It looks the part. And yeah, again, like I said earlier on with the System 3, it's completely different, and the remote is one of the most different parts of it.
And a lot of users will be quite pleased about that, I'm sure. One thing I'm interested in is frame compatibility. I mean, it's very rare you'd do a frame swap or a complete system swap, but just out of mechanical interest, because obviously the Gen 2 and Gen 3 having very different sized motors, the frames for those are not compatible. Is the Gen 4 motor compatible with the Gen 3 motor's frame?
No, and I'll just correct you there, Sean, if I may again, apologies. A Gen 2 and a Gen 3 is the same bolt pattern, actually.
Oh, brilliant, okay.
So they're not compatible in that the frame design, if you like, that horseshoe kind of area of the bottom bracket of the frame could be different, and the profile of the frame, the way it wraps around the motor, is the different part. So that's normally why those two don't fit. But the actual bolt pattern is the same on those ones. Okay, so Gen 2, Gen 3. With Gen 4, it's completely different in every way. It's a complete rethink on the Gen 4, and the frames are different. So, I mean, for e-bike regulations, you know, the CE regulations on a bike and a couple of other issues, they're not cross-compatible anyway. You can't just buy a system and fit it to a bike. You know, everything is governed by CE regulations, and you know, every bike has to be certified as an EPAC. You know, we're maybe not going to talk about regulations, but that's obviously one of the most important things in the e-bike market. So, you know, changing motors from one bike to another, when the software on the drive unit is specific to that bike right down to the frame number, would normally suggest that you wouldn't be able to just buy another drive unit and fit it and upgrade it, if you like. So a motor exchange is only ever going to be like for like. So the software needs to be cloned. If you've got a Gen 2, a Gen 3, or a Gen 4, that's what you're going to fit because of regulations, not because of the mechanical side of it, just to be clear.
That makes complete sense. And I do want to talk about the regulations later, because there's certain things that I know frustrate a lot of us in the industry, and interested to get your idea on that and if you've got any insight or otherwise. One of the things with e-bike users that's always talked about, of course, is the battery length and essentially, you know, how much juice you're going to get out of it. And I remember speaking to someone, this might be an outdated conversation now, but must have been a year or two ago, and they talked about driving an electric car, doing a test drive. And essentially, they were driving up and down the A38 in Devon, and every single interaction between the sales rep and this driver was about battery use. So, oh, you don't want to accelerate past that lorry, or you use this much energy. And it was all just a completely different experience of driving. And obviously, you know, the systems now have got tremendous range. So you're talking about having even more range on the new systems. But we have been hearing, you know, for the last few years, there's a whole new generation of batteries in the offing as well, which will radically transform e-bike range. So tell us a bit about the new battery life and range. Tell us about the new software, and does that help efficiency and such? And then you talked about the bike being future-proof. So is that going to include new battery technologies on the horizon?
Yeah, there's quite a lot to talk about there. Yeah, obviously we've come a long way. So the first battery we did was, what, 288 watt hours, and now we're at 750 watt hours. So you know, we've managed to squeeze quite a lot more range out of these batteries. Obviously, the size has increased exponentially, but the actual range that you'd get is a lot more than just the extra watt hours that we've increased by, and that's mainly down to the technology within the battery, you know, the PCB inside, you know, the management system, if you like, and how it obviously maintains the battery, the charging, the drain down, the usage, if you like, obviously how the bike is ridden, how it's charged, how often it's charged. You know, the extremities of usage and the extremities of charging can obviously make them, can accelerate the degradation. There's obviously a hell of a lot to e-bike batteries. As far as our batteries are concerned, the actual hardware, we're still using an 18650 cell. So same cell we've always used, which gives the best thermal properties, we believe at the moment. Certainly it works the best for us. As far as software is concerned, obviously the batteries do and always have done connect to the Bosch diagnostic tool. So, you know, it forms a big part of our training, talking about this, looking at error codes, doing software updates for batteries. You know, a few years ago, we bought out the 6-amp charger, and you had to update all the battery software, because if the 6-amp charger was plugged into it, you'd want the battery to get the most out of it, if you like. So there was a software update that went with all the batteries, just because of the introduction of that 6-amp charger. Whether or not the consumer had one or not, it didn't matter. The battery had that update, which was done on the diagnostic tool. The future of batteries, I don't really know anything about that, Sean, to be honest with you. I'm not aware of the direction that Bosch is going in with this, with future technology. I'm sure they are looking at various different types of cells, or, you know, the technology within lithium ion or even not lithium ion. I would be guessing and speculating, which obviously I can't do. But at the moment, we are sticking with the technology we know. But certainly the battery management is something that we're working a lot with to make the efficiency of these batteries and maximize the return that the consumer gets, i.e. the range.
So, Mark, I've just got an interesting question here for you. You mentioned on the training course that, you know, obviously currently there's a 6-amp fast charger option, which will, you know, sort of knock 50% into a 500 battery within, you know, less than an hour. Yeah. But you've dropped that for the smart system. Maybe what was the thinking behind that?
I think the main thing behind it is because it's not a product that moves particularly quickly or in great numbers. So looking at the market, it's not selling how we thought it might do, possibly. There aren't many brands, because obviously we don't make a bike, we supply these systems to the brands. Mm. And there aren't many brands, I think there's two that I can think of, that do offer the 6-amp charger with the bike. Mm. And they might be brands with dual battery, which would make sense, wouldn't it? Because you've got two batteries to charge, not one. But they're few and far between. So the OEMs aren't taking up the sale of those chargers that much. And also aftermarket, it's just not the demand for it. And I think, to be fair, most people are more than happy to charge overnight with a 2-amp or 4-amp. I think 4-amp is the more popular one, obviously. Mm. So again, I don't think there's a massive need in the market for the 6-amp charger, which is a shame. I mean, I always use one, but then I'm one of these people that suddenly thinks, oh no, I've not charged my bike. I want to ride it in a minute.
Yeah.
So lastminute.com.
Yeah. It was interesting, you know, when you talked on the training session about the fact that the batteries can actually take a charging current of up to 10 amps. Now, I'm not suggesting anyone goes out and hacks their Bosch charger to try and put out 10 amps, but this does raise the interesting question around public e-bike charging. Now, obviously, if you've ridden for a number of hours, you get to a cafe or a visitor center or whatever, you obviously don't want to be sat around for 2 hours plus charging up your battery again. So you want to be able to use that kind of full fat current. And I've actually got a question in with bikeenergy.com people in Austria who have developed an awful lot of the e-bike charging network across the sort of Central European Alpine countries to ask, will they be utilizing this kind of up to 10 amp fast charging capability in future generations of their charging infrastructure? And they're obviously partnering quite closely with Bosch. Bosch have stopped making their e-bike charging stations, and they are actually now working with the bikeenergy.com team. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not they can get that super fast charging, sort of like the Tesla supercharger, but into the e-bike travel world.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it'd be nice to think that those could be 6 amp chargers that they're going to be using, but I wouldn't know, speculating there.
Yeah.
So a few of the things that you've said, Mark, have sort of led into this question, and it's all about the design of the entire e-bike. So, of course, as you said, Bosch are supplying equipment OEM to manufacturers. So I assume there's quite a lot of design discussion between the bike manufacturer and Bosch. But one of the things I'm really fascinated with on the mechanical side is where e-bikes are going and when they really become their own thing. Because what we have on a lot of bicycles is a heavily evolved version of 1950s or even pre-1950s technology. You know, the sort of things we're talking about with the chains and the derailleur gear systems, etc. And of course, a lot of it just isn't suitable for e-bikes. You know, no one needs a 12-speed derailleur gear system on their e-bike. Something like a hub gear or a gearbox is far better. Even a chain system compared to a belt drive, you know, seems a bit outdated. So first of all, I'm interested in is what level of technical discussion and cooperation would happen between Brand X and Bosch. And also, as the Bosch guy, as the person with the most insight into this, what would you see if you could design an e-mountain bike, for example, as that's what we all love to ride? What would that look like?
That's a good question, Sean. I mean, it's kind of obviously led by the component market as to what these bikes have got on them. So, like, as you say, a 12-speed system on a EMTB in some cases might seem wrong, but you know, currently that is what's out there from the big brands, and that's obviously what the OEMs choose to spec their bikes with. As far as Bosch is concerned, there's different software on the drive units which relates to the gear system that's being used. So if you've got a hub gear system, whether mechanical, you know, manual or automatic, DI2, you know, hub or derailleur, the software needs to be specific to that system, so the motor obviously works correctly with the gearing. For example, you know, if you've got a lot of torque, you need to make sure that the hub gear that you're using can take that torque, and you don't want the motor obviously tearing it to pieces. So the software very much governs that side of it. So specific software on the drive units depending on what system is used. I quite like the idea of a gearbox system, you know, even maybe separate to a motor, if you like, which would obviously cut down wear and tear. Even the belt drive systems currently would seem to do that. But then, yeah, I don't know whether it's a price point thing, whether maintenance is cheaper. You know, obviously, if you crash the bike and you damage components, are they cheaper, easier to fix, more available to fix? Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, if you look at some of the latest technology that's coming through on, particularly on EMTBs, you are seeing these kind of hub or gearbox systems, if you like. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. But they might become more popular. But I think certainly in the UK, Sean, the derailleur market is just the safe bet, I think. And that is kind of where we are for the time being. Maybe you agree with that. Yeah.
And Mike, as a working mechanic who does a lot of work with e-bikes, what are the things that manufacturers have spec'd on their bikes that has both delighted you and confounded you?
Oh, well, first of all, 12-speed drivetrains. Something that's going to get eaten really quickly that you don't need and is then going to cost a fortune to replace. Why people spec that sort of thing, I don't know. You know, I've had customers who bought in really nice bikes. Looking at you, Mondraker, lovely bikes, you know, $4,000-$5,000 e-bikes, but within 1,000 Ks, because no one's explained to them not to spend the whole time riding around in the smallest three or four cogs. And so they've been riding at low RPMs. The motor's been grunting away at 85 Newton meters. And within 1,000 Ks, they've eaten not only a lovely Eagle chain, but also 200 quid's worth of cassette. And they're like, I don't understand this. I've only ridden 1,000 Ks. And so why people are putting these super high-end, you know, 12-speed drivetrains onto e-bikes that are going to just eat them without very, very careful maintenance is just beyond me.
Yeah, completely with you. I mean, when I was looking at a second-hand e-bike for Julia, the fact the Powerfly had a SRAM EX 8-speed on was one of the things that swung it, as well as actually the Bosch CX system. So let's get into the legals, and let's get into the legislation. So at the moment, my completely personal subjective opinion is if you're going to get an e-bike, it may as well be a mountain bike with the most travel and the biggest tires possible, because they all go the same speed. They're all limited. Like, we're talking in the UK and Europe to 25K an hour, unless you get, like, here in Switzerland, they've got the boosted versions that go 45K an hour, and you need a license plate and insurance and all that kind of stuff. So essentially, I can't see the point in riding an e-gravel bike even, or certainly not an e-road bike, unless you're one of these old fellas who wants to keep up on the climbs on the club run. But Bianchi lent us a gorgeous Bianchi gravel bike, and I just thought, well, it's pointless. Why not ride something with 3-inch tires and loads of bumps, you know, capable suspension on there? So I think for a mountain bike, 25 km an hour, never really had a problem with that. But for e-road bikes, e-gravel bikes, it really does make sense to start hitting the American limits, which I think is more like 30K an hour, isn't it, for those sort of bikes. So do you think there's any chance, Mark, of the speed limiter changing, preferably, you know, getting a bit faster without a huge amount more legislation and legal stuff around it, such as licensing and license plates and MOTs and things?
Yeah, that is another extremely good question. With it's a big question, that one. I think there is, or there has been, some kind of petition that's gone into Parliament about raising the cutoff speed limit of an e-bike, or the assistance limit, should we call it, from like 15.5 miles an hour to 18 or 20, I think. But yeah, let's be honest, that petition has been in Parliament since around Brexit time, or slightly before, I think. And you could argue that there's quite a lot of other things going on at the moment that the people that be, the powers that be, aren't really looking into it as such. Personally, I don't think the speed limit's going to change. We're the same as Europe, aren't we? 25 kilometres an hour, which is 15.53, obviously, in English money. The UK market could do it on its own, because I guess we're on our own now, essentially out of Europe. There's a number of things to consider here. It's in whose interest or not to change the cutoff speed limit. There's a number of very complex topics that go around this. There's good reasons why maybe you could increase it to 20 miles an hour, which is the US, Canada, New Zealand and Australia limits currently, I believe. But I don't really know. I think there might even be some kind of consultation with the Bicycle Association on this one, I believe. So I couldn't really tell you anything factual about any of that, but certainly from my own personal point of view, I don't think the cutoff limit will be raised anytime soon.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because, of course, you speak to pretty much any bike mechanic or bike shop, and what do they say? Everyone has got a chip on their bike.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what we hear. You know, everyone has got a chip on their bike. Everyone is illegally doing this anyway. It's a bit like the war on drugs. You know, it's completely unwinnable, and everyone takes drugs. Well, not everyone, but anyone who wants to take drugs takes them anyway. And, you know, yada, yada, yada. That's a subject for another podcast. But I'm not saying e-bike regulation is the same as the war on drugs, but it's got some similarities. So essentially,
I was going to say, Sean, I can't wait for them to bring out speed limiters for cars.
Exactly, exactly, and geo-restricted and all the rest of it. It's funny, yeah. That one, isn't it? But essentially, what we've got is a system, Ben, where people will tamper with the motors. So I've seen on YouTube, you know, you can tamper even without a chip. You can move bits of the components and it tricks the sensors. And of course, there's a tremendous amount of dangers in doing this, both to the system and potentially to the rider. And there are some tamper-proof technologies that Bosch have developed, but I'm not sure if they're fully implemented yet. So what, you know, what technologies are there, Mark, and have they got any teeth?
Yeah, they have. There is technology, and as far as I'm aware, a law was passed in Europe, which were part of that law, was passed about 3 years ago, that all the system manufacturers had to have some kind of tuning detection software built into their drive units. So when that regulation came into fruition, Bosch obviously towed the line, and we've introduced this this error code and this limp home mode feature in the drive unit that can detect when the bike is tuned, and we'll put the bike into a limp mode, reducing speed cut off down to about 10 miles an hour, so obviously well below 15, and then the consumer would have to remove the item, take it to a Bosch dealer. They would obviously reset the software accordingly, and you carry on from there, essentially. But also, in taking it back to the dealer, the consumer should expect their motor warranty to have been voided in the process, because obviously tampering with the speed of the motor would potentially void the drive unit warranty, because it wasn't designed to work that way. If that makes sense. So again, it's a complex topic, this one, but you know, warranty potentially is void, and it needs to go back to a Bosch dealer to reset the software, delete the error code for tuning, and then go from there. And I believe all the systems out there, not just Bosch, they've all had to introduce something into their primary software, if you want to call it that, that basically has this tuning manipulation detection inside it.
Well, it makes complete sense. And if anyone doubts the need for that, there's a Facebook group which is called Homemade E-Bikes. Have you guys seen that?
I haven't. No.
Is that the one that's it's just full of sheds on fire?
Basically, it's just full of infernos in people's back gardens. Yep.
Yeah.
Hey, not really that interested in that.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to actually divert back from legislation, back towards something you mentioned just before, Sean, about gravel. And I actually must take exception, my lord, because I've reviewed an e-gravel bike. It wasn't the Bosch motor system. It was the e-bike motion one, the hub drive one. I bloomin' loved it because it was fabulous. It felt like a normal road bike, but at the end of a very, very long ride, there was enough room to get you up some hills. Now, obviously, it was hub drive, so it wasn't using the gears, so it didn't work well at really slow speed. So you needed a reasonable amount of fitness, and it was only giving you 40 Newton meters. But it was actually, I liked it. I did some huge, huge rides on it, you know, sort of, you know, that no way, or I would have been a complete dribbling mess at the end if I hadn't had the e-assist. So I definitely get that e-gravel is a thing, and I wanted to bring Mark in here because the new smart system, there is the potential for an e-gravel mode, and particularly one that it has support for higher cadence, up to 120 RPM compared to the optimal cadence for the Gen 4 motors, which is around 75. So maybe just talk to us a bit about e-gravel.
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, e-gravel is becoming a much, much bigger market now. As far as that smart system is concerned, I'm not entirely sure if we're currently making software for eGravel yet. I know there is on System 2, because I think we covered that in the training, but I don't think we covered anything on eGravel in System 3. But I would safely assume that there will be that option within it, because it would make sense to carry on that, or to carry through that software into the smart system. But certainly the eGravel mode is something that can be optimized in the drive unit to give the consumer the best return. So made on, you know, higher cadence and the torque delivery of the drive unit, and basically making the dynamic of the drive unit different and very much specific to eGravel riding, which is something obviously we've developed with the existing systems. And I think it will be something that will be on the smart system. But of course, at the moment, I'm not even aware of what smart system gravel bikes are out there yet.
Yeah, and before a thousand hipsters cry into their chai lattes that gravel should never have anything electric in it, I would say get over yourselves, because there's an awful lot of people out there who can benefit from, you know, electric, exactly the same as with mountain biking. And so I'm all for anything that gets more people riding more often is good. Whether it's electric, whether it's suspension, whether it's fatter tires, skinnier tires, don't care. So long as people are smiling and they're on their bikes, job done.
Yeah, here. And obviously, you know, living in a country where e-bikes are absolutely everywhere I turn, including the, for some reason, controversial electric scooters, which are very controversial in the UK. They're just everywhere here. You know, these sort of micro-mobility electric vehicles are super, super popular. So essentially, I'm assuming that there's bike mechanics listening to this podcast that want to get trained up. So Mark, where can people access the Bosch training? Where can they get in touch with you?
Well, basically, Bosch partners with Magura. So all of our dealers would need to have a Magura account, which I think most have. But the actual training courses are visible on the Magura B2B. So the dealers go on to the Magura, they log in, and they can see the availability of our courses. But fortunately, because of COVID, the pandemic, and the size of the courses that we're running, i.e. the number of attendees, as Mike will know, and due to the growth in e-bikes over the last sort of 3, 4, 5 years in the UK, our courses have completely sold out for this year. All model year 22 courses have gone, which is amazing. And we've never had the take up like this before, but obviously we knew it was going to come because other European countries have done this already. So we're following nicely behind them with the growth in e-bikes in the UK. I think bike shops are now understanding the importance of training for a lot of products, not just Bosch e-bikes, but so many other things. And the importance of training, being certified, having the confidence to work with it is vital if you want to be successful and if you want the consumer to come to you because you know what you're doing. Training is vital. So saying all that, yeah, we'd love to see people on our courses, which we're going to do because they've all been sold out. So we're not going to be doing the next training courses until November 2022.
Well, that'll probably be my training when I get back onto getting updated. And Mike, where can people find you online as well if they want to talk and debate and find out more about what you're up to?
Well, it's the whole Twitter at Tweety Mike. Or basically, if you find anywhere where John Galloway's made a comment, I'll be the one talking the opposite.
Well, that's absolutely great. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a really fascinating chat. And as ever, almost feels like we're just getting started. We're still in eco mode and there's massive more we could get into. I was thinking to talk about maybe e-mounting bike racing and such, which is getting big now, but we'll have to do that another day. So guys, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, and here's to e-bikes making cycling fun for a huge amount of people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, thanks, Sean. Thanks, Mike.
Good stuff.
All right. Bye-bye.